Welcome to Practically Intelligent. My name is Sinan Ozdemir, and as always with me is the wonderful Akshay Bhushan. Do you want to tell our audience a little bit more about our guest today, Akshay?
For sure, yeah. I'm excited. Mike is an old friend who has been in the UX design profession for 20 plus years. He was formerly a design lead at Meta, Twitch, SurveyMonkey, and then co-founded and sold multiple companies, the latest of which sold to Brex. Mike is both a generalist and a specialist. He's incredibly honed in his craft and has some thoughts on where AI is taking the profession of UX design and how his own craft is changing. So let's dive right in.
Let's do it. Welcome, Mike. Thanks so much for being on the show with us today. We're going to get into all those posters behind you because I'm very curious. And in fact, I think one of them is going to have to do with our first question for you. I just want to get a level set for our audience to tell us a little bit about how you got into the profession of UX design and really what was it like when you got into the field?
Yeah. So this poster back here is Age of Empires. Especially, you know, just the Age of Kings, Age of Empires 2. I just discovered website design and development because I had a clan back in the day and the clan needed a website. So I learned how to build websites, how to design them. And then, you know, it was kind of like snowball effect, you know, that kind of learned. I learned HTML, learned CSS. By the way, I started on Front Page 98, if anyone remembers that. And then that snowballed into learning Photoshop and then a little bit of Flash, music, et cetera. And then eventually, you know, I built this clan website and I had a lot of other gamers on Age of Empires, you know, other clans ask me if I can build their website. And so I was like, yeah, so I've got this long list of like 20 or so clans that I'm building free websites for. And eventually someone said, hey, can you build my my clan website? And I finally had to start turning them away. I was like, you know, I've got this long list. I can't anymore. And then this guy, he was like, well, what if I paid you money? Can you put me at the front of the list? And that was my big aha moment. You know, I was middle school, probably like, you know, 13 years old. It's like, yeah, sure. Like, yeah, you can. Yeah, of course, I'll put you at the first of the list. I'll start yours tomorrow. So that was like my first $100 into this industry. I realized, you know, wow, I can make money doing this. And that kind of fueled kind of, you know, my own learning and just continuing to learn and get better at this and then get better at the craft. Now for my own career, you know, that's kind of the beginnings of just my passion for my career. You know, I, going from being able to build websites, design them, and just kind of a designer and a builder, I was, you know, had a great, kind of skill set to start my own companies, build my ideas in a way. So I would have ideas, I have an app idea, I'd go ahead and just build it and ship it and launch it. And so that's where I started to kind of get into my early career, was building my own startups, kind of learning the business side of things as well. So you kind of, you know, talking about like that trifecta of like business, you know, PMs, design and engineering, kind of was just honing that skill set, you know, on my own, you know, building my own startups, joining startups, and eventually that kind of just ducktailed into, you know, bigger, you know, eventually got me out to Silicon Valley and things like that, at larger companies.
Yeah, no, amazing. And I think, and again, for everyone listening, we're talking about Age of Empires 2 released in, what was it, 1998, 1999. So we're talking decades of UX experience. And I think one of, you know, no surprises here, one of the obvious major milestones in the last decade has been the user experience and user interface around, let's say, both AI chatbots, call it Claude, call it ChatGPT, and just in general AI-powered applications. So thinking about how you got into building clan websites for Age of Empires and learning how to code and learning the business side of things and basically having to bootstrap all of this yourself, now that we are in this new era of how companies are thinking about implementing AI into existing workflows or, frankly, building new companies from the ground up with AI in mind, how has, and there's probably many, but how in a few major ways, how has the kind of ideation and thought process around building a user experience around AI applications changed or are really just kind of come out of the ground?
Yeah. So whenever I first got started, you know, I'd say around 2005 was when I really started to take, you know, the profession of what we're doing here, you know, web design, UI design, UX design, product design, right? Seriously. And that was an era of, I feel like, this industry where you weren't specialized just yet. You were like a UI designer, kind of meant you were a UI designer, you were a UX designer, you were a mobile designer, you were a web designer, you're everything. And you probably also did a lot of coding, at least some dabbling in HTML and CSS front end code as well. So there, I wouldn't say like you're kind of generalist in a way, but it was more of kind of it bred from in that era. A lot of people came from, it was a hobby turned, you know, career. And then as we started to shift towards, you know, a maturity in our industry where we started to specialize, you know, you became a product designer. A product designer did a very specific thing, such as product design. There was a UX designer who didn't, you know, I don't want to get in the debate of what is a UX designer, but, you know, it was, they designed UX, you know, as we won't get into what that means, right? And the UI designer was, there's visual designers, there's just all these specializations. And now with the emergence of AI, you know, not to just like go straight into like the bullpen here, but it's, you know, you could almost say that we could see a world where the skill set of what we do starts to become moving towards more towards what we would call a generalist, what a generalist is. You know, it's back in the day, it was a master of, what's the saying? Jack of all trades of like, you know, it's a T-shirt.
Master of none.
Yeah, the master of none. But like back in the day, it was, I was, you know, you're great at a lot of things, but maybe you're not like a master in everything. Well, nowadays it's, you started to master in one thing through the 10, you know, the 2010s. But now I think even the emergent of AI allows you to go back to that T-shaped, you know, the not necessarily master of none. You can use AI to kind of help be that crutch to help master. So you can be a little bit more of a generalist where you're doing product, but, you know, with a crutch, with, you know, with the support of an AI agent, doing design with a little bit of support from an AI agent, et cetera.
Yeah. Is that an acceleration of trend? Maybe, I think, you know, you saw that specialization and then, you know, Figma and Sketch, and there's that whole maybe launch of products, maybe right before the middle of the prior decade. And I felt like the, can you give an, maybe as a, you know, and I'm sure, you know, our UX designers will remember this, but maybe the PMs and engineers in our audience, what was it like, what was the tactile experience like to first experience those products, and how did that change how you approached your craft?
Yeah, I remember the first time that I experienced like Sketch, for instance, because I was, you know, Photoshop was the, what you did, right? But Sketch was, it just so simple, you know, it got all, you know, it wasn't a graphics tool. It wasn't an image editing tool. It was just a UI interface tool, which means there was only like, you know, 5% of the amount of features that Photoshop had. And so I just remember thinking of like, wow, like this is really what I'm going to be designing my, you know, my UI in. This is what everyone's like latching onto. And after a while it became just really magical experience of like, yeah, I don't need all that other image editing stuff. But also as a builder, the emergence of CSS3 and gradients and browser technologies and standardization around browser tech meant that like you didn't need Photoshop to build like fancy gradients and a lot of the things that, a lot of the design aesthetic that was a trend during that kind of era as well. So that kind of helped a lot in terms of just not needing that crutch on image editing, and really you just needed image editing for legit photos, you know, and graphic design. But at the same time, you know, Figma eventually came around, and Figma, you know, it, you know, we'd already been introduced to Sketch and kind of the simplification around the UI and the feature set, just needing like UI, what tools do you need to draw UI? It was that collaboration piece around Figma that really just, you know, was eye-opening in terms of, you know, just being able to share a single link to anyone, you know, any of your colleagues and say, hey, check this link out, rather than having to like publish it to, at the time Sketch had a plugin that published to InVision, you know, and then you had to like manage like, well, is that the most up-to-date version of what I published? I don't know. I don't remember. Where else have I taken a screenshot and posted it somewhere that I need to like update in a PRD or, you know, an engineering doc hand off doc. But now with just Figma, you just post a single link. It's a live, living, breathing link that made it just so much easier to collaborate on that front. Not to mention their, you know, the multiplayer tools they have too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the VCs, I know you like read the analyses of why they missed Figma, et cetera, and it's that it created its own market, right? The collaboration. Mm-hmm. I remember even thinking through when Sketch came out. I think the general talk track I remember was like, oh, this kind of kills UX design. It automates a bunch of the work. And it turns out the market was, you know, 50 times bigger than anyone realized because of things like FigJam, the collaborative nature, WebAssembly that's powering a lot of real-time specking and collaboration over design. And so did you, at the time, I just currently remember the sentiment among, you know, professionals like yourself, you probably didn't think it would completely transform the way your job as it had, or like when you look back, like talk track what it was then versus now, give us a little bit of that, that gradient.
Yeah. I was the one, probably, I feel like I was the one designer that slept on Figma for, you know, at least a couple of years. Cause I was just kind of like, okay, a new tool. What's wrong with Sketch? I'm fine with Sketch, you know. And by the way, one of my best friends, you know, he was on Photoshop still at the time, right? And so we're kind of just like, while we like to say that we're early adopters, it was just one of those trends where we're just like, well, we've been through this, you know, new tool, you know, fatigue quite a bit in our career. So it was kind of like, well, what is this? It's just a UI tool. What's the big deal? And so, yeah, I didn't really think that it was going to be, I didn't think it was going to put, like, say, Sketch, for instance, quote unquote, out of business in a way, right? I never saw that coming. So,
and I mean, to that point of building a new market, I, as an engineer, not a designer, not a UX designer in any way, what shape or form, I use Figma to make all the, for example, all the figures in my books, I make myself in Figma. It took me a learning curve, but I figured it out. So the whole idea of kind of building your own market is, yeah, they didn't realize it was big, because I want to come back to something you said, Mike. I am someone who is neither a generalist nor a specialist in design, but software like Figma not necessarily automates that, but at least gives me an interface to build something that is not going to be as good as if I hired a professional to do it, but something I definitely could not have done myself. And I think that's actually a really great analogy to how we think about the application of AI in a lot of these softwares. So coming back to your idea in the bullpen, and here at Practically Intelligent, we like to live in the bullpen. The idea that we may no longer need specialists because, you know, we'll all be generalists and the AI will kind of fill in those gaps for us. I won't lie to you. I've kind of heard both ways on this argument, which is to say or at least the side that you just mentioned is, if I'm a generalist, and let's even call it engineering. If I'm a generalist in engineering, right, I understand basic front end, basic back end, basic ML, let's say. I could use a tool like Claude to say, look, generally, I know what I want. The front end talks to the back end. The back end has, you know, asynchronous jobs, workers, and it all needs to fit together. I think Kubernetes will work, but you tell me. Like, I'm pointing the AI in the right direction, and the AI can be the specialist to pick up that slack and say, oh, sure, let's implement whatever Rabbit or Redis as your queue. And I say, sure, that's great. I'm going to copy and paste, try it, fail, iterate. That makes sense. I've heard the flip side as well, which is to say, we still need human specialists because AI is still in itself the generalist phase. It itself cannot be a true specialist in a lot of areas. So you need a specialist to fill in those gaps. And I think both are right to a certain degree in certain domains, in certain industries. Yeah. But to come back to your side, quote unquote, of that, which is to say in a lot of UX capabilities or capacities, the generalists will be able to do more with AI tools. You know, call it, you know, AI in Figma or AI just in general. How does that impact, I mean, just the field in general? Like, how is that impacting current UX designers who you would label as a specialist? Like, what might their lives look like in the next couple of years if that trend continues where the generalists will take over and the AI will fill in that gap?
Yeah, I totally see both sides of it as well.
Sure. Like,
and I don't think there's a right or wrong. I think it really depends on how you do end up using, you know, AI to, you know, be a, you know, supercharge yourself. I come at it from the generalist perspective because I think of, you know, as AI, we adopt more of AI in our workflows. I see as us as, you know, creators moving more towards a more strategic role. And that's where the generalist kind of take comes from, where we're able to be more like art directors in a way, or just direct, you know, the very different kind of specialists, you know, have multiple specialists. You know, of course, this is when, like you said, AI can become a specialist in some regard. I don't think we're there yet, but when we are there, you know, I can kind of sit above and I can be that big umbrella kind of bird's eye view, kind of directing, kind of orchestrating all of these agents towards a North Star that a generalist might be the only type of skill set that could see that, where that North Star is. Whereas a specialist, I'm not trying to throw shade at specialists, but, you know, in general, you know, a specialist might not be able to see the North Star. I mean, I'm talking about building businesses here too, mm-hmm. right? I'm not just saying like, hey, a programmer or an engineer or a PM just doing kind of like one thing and not being able to see the North Star in their own specialization. I'm thinking like, let's talk about PMs here. PMs, in a way, a lot of them that I've met, they're generalists in design, or they're design curious, or they're engineering curious, but they just really can't implement those ideas. They need AI to implement or to be that specialization. So you can imagine a world where PMs now, they are empowered and they can do more with a smaller team, or they can be more of that North Star director.
Yeah. And I think that really is that really matches with a lot of my perspective as well. Even again, when it comes to engineering, this idea that I would just need to show you the North Star. I mean, if you think about even at a really low level of LLMs, like reinforcement learning, you're kind of nudging the AI and saying, that was good, that was bad. And you know where you're trying to go. You just kind of keep putting it in the lines and saying, no, hold on. You're going too far to the left. Go this way a little bit. And with my analogy with Figma, again, my North Star is I can see a figure in my book, in my head. And up till now, I had to either make a bad one and hope a graphics department for my publisher can pick up the slack that I never met before, or I pay someone professionally to do it for me. But now, because I know the North Star and I am comfortable learning a new tool, call it Figma, call it AI, I can now nudge until I get something that I am happy with. So I think that analogy works. And I think in a lot of cases, and more and more cases, that is going to be how people interact with, call it agents, call it AI. Just I see where we're trying to go, and I'm willing to iterate on this tool until we get closer and closer to my direction.
It's interesting to use this generalist specialist thing, because you know what I found even with engineers that I observe using Cursor, right? There's almost a bifurcation, right? There's you know super skilled senior engineers who are able to prompt it efficiently, and then you know this obvious democratization like Sanan just talked about, but it still feels like you have both coexisting, like you said, Mike, generalist winning and democratization of technology to create, you know, cool front ends and use UX you can prompt, and cool designs, obviously, with Midjourney. But then also you can get a lot of out of it, and it's a lot of horsepower if you're able to use a specialist. And so you're kind of both, right? Like, you know, you've led entire design teams, you've been a founder, which is generalist role. You've also are incredibly specialized on your craft. And so I'm kind of curious, like, day-to-day, what has changed most in your workflow in the last 2 years? And can you walk us through, like, what are the two or three things when you boot up your laptop and you examine your day? What are how does your day look differently? What tools are you spending more time in? How has your craft changed and your workflows changed in the last 2 to 3 years?
Yeah. I use AI in my role. I've noticed I use it as like a design buddy in a way where, you know, if I'm kind of stuck on a design problem, I really can't crack it. Instead of going to like a UI prompt that like goes and designs it for me, I just go to, say, ChatGPT, and I start to explain and kind of write a little bit of a narrative around what I'm trying to accomplish, what the user goals are, et cetera, et cetera. And then ask it like, what might be, you know, some general directions I could take it. And then, you know, it spits out only text, but I can start to kind of educate and kind of expand my problem space, my problem thinking a little bit outside of what I might not have been exploring myself. And that's really helped me a lot in just in exploring and innovating and just trying to, you know, problem solve. Now another one, you know, is that's me being a specialist, needing help being a specialist myself, right? And the whole design craft. Now there's the kind of UX copywriting, which I utilize a lot with with AI and LLMs of, you know, I just don't know the right, you know, I know what I'm trying to say, cause you know, like what you were saying, but I just don't know how to say it. Help me, you know, and I just use it as a little writing buddy. Okay, just give me some ideas of where I can take this and help me make it more approachable. And I use the word like, write it, you know, use UX copy is a term I use a lot. It's like, hey, and that usually nudges them in a really, in a really good direction.
I mean, I can even echo that. Like I especially for creative tasks, like I'm writing something, often what I'll do is I'll if I'm getting a writer's block or something, I'll tell the AI, hey, I think this is where, again, North Star, this is where I'm trying to go. This is what I have. What are some like branches that you can think of? Like how would you rephrase this? And I usually don't end up copying, pasting, or using it, but I will read it and say, oh, interesting. That's an interesting take. I think I can now iterate on that in my head and take it back to where I was going. I'd love to talk more about kind of the interfaces, so to speak, that you were talking about. And I think, what kinds of interfaces does an AI, like, and again, let's call it ChatGPT for now, what kind of interfaces does that open up? And like, how can someone think about the learning curve for using that kind of an interfaces? And frankly, I'd be more curious to learn your learning curve for using interface like that and how you think that influences other people's learning curves.
Yeah. So it's designing and thinking about what the future of AI UI is, it's a pretty tough problem. And you're kind of trying to guess the future, but the great thing about design and UX is that people are, our brains and our behaviors and our psychology has not changed for, you know, 200,000, however, you know, far back you want to go in the human race and civilization. We're still like the same brain that, like, say, Egyptians, we have the same brain Egyptians had, you know. So that's the great thing. We don't change. We kind of, behavior does not change. So we can kind of design and model what the future of UI might be based on how, you know, how we as a civilization, you know, use and think. Now, with that said, though, you still got to model it on new technology, because that is what changes. But you can, you're kind of thinking about, the idea of ChatGPT, you know, the chat, just not just ChatGPT, just the form factor of chat. I think in the right now, it's really, you know, because chat, you know, AI is not just yet, it's not very mature, like you're saying. It works for like every single use case. You can throw anything at it, and you can just use words. It's the dictionary. However, now we start to get into like, that's not UI, you know, that's just, to me, that's just a form factor. But when we start to get into like, okay, well, what about UI and AI UI? Well, where I'm in my day job right now, I think a lot about that in terms of, we're building AI software for the recruiting industry. And so with the emergence of agents and operators, you know, we're really thinking a lot about what does that future UI look like? And I'm really starting to come to this realization that future UI, it might not be, and this is all speculation, by the way, it might not be a single, like, well, what is the AI of UI? I'm sorry, I'm getting my word. What's the UI of AI? like, you know, in terms of like, what's the next evolution of chat? Like, I don't think that's the kind of conversation I'm having in my head. The one I'm asking myself is more of like niche. So like, for instance, you used traveling and booking travel earlier. It's really kind of seems very archaic to start to just prompt it with a lot of like writing sentences. It's like, I don't want to write. And, you know, kind of the whole like early on Google, you know, the biggest complaint with Google and the search input was, what do I put in the search box? I don't know what to type. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of in that same world where you start to ask people, what do I type in this? How do I prompt, you know, and you have to get really good at it. So with that said, it's more of like, I see a world potentially where the AI kind of steps back and goes into the background, and we have UI to help people do the prompting. So maybe in the background, we're still doing, you know, connecting to the ChatGPT.
In a lot of ways, it's almost like we were given the engine to a car before the actual car was made. And he was like, this engine's awesome. You know, as long as you know how to use it and build around it, it's amazing. But until more people kind of figure out how to build that car around the engine, then it's going to be like, oh, okay, just get in the car and hit go. The engine will do the rest for you. Don't worry about it. I think that kind of access to the raw workload processing of an LLM, because ChatGPT, like in its very nascency in a couple of years ago, really simply was, you're talking to an LLM. You don't know what that is, and I'm sorry to say that, but this is it. This is what it looks like to talk to an LLM. And they had OpenAI had barely figured, no offense to them, they had barely figured out how to turn their engine into a car, right? You know, their engine, call it GPT-3, had the knowledge. It just didn't really quite know how to have a conversation until ChatGPT came out 2 years later. And then people were like, oh, I get it. And with light prompting, you can get it to work pretty well. With heavy prompting, you could get it to work, I mean, I would say really well, even when ChatGPT came out. And I think as the AI gets, you know, this is a common kind of motto is prompt engineering is a bug, right? And as AIs get better, you won't need to prompt engineer as much. I kind of agree with that. I mean, it's true to a sense. You know, you're not going to need to know, you know, 10-shot learning is going to be the best way to build your prompts if reasoning models can keep up. But at the same time, that tabula rasa, that blank slate problem, and having built chatbots for over a decade, I can also tell you that even when we put out a chatbot in 2015, the number of times people, because we measured this, would come to the chat, stare basically, and then leave without typing anything was greater than the number of times people actually asked the AI a question. Because they didn't know what to say. They're like, am I basically Googling something? Or do I talk to you like you're kind of a person? Or is it a hybrid? Like, what am I supposed to say to this thing to make it do what I want? And that's still a problem. That blank slate problem is still an issue, and not just AI, really any UX issue, I assume, but.
Yeah. But even more so when it's a blank input field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the search analogy is really interesting, Mike, because it feels like, yeah, with Web 2.0, knowledge aggregation, you know, was kind of a key archetype. And so I remember when you would see like Airbnb or like preliminary, like, you know, apps that were well designed, it was this sifting of information. Obviously, you know, there was like beveled buttons and it was like the color scheme was slick, but it was also this kind of formula, like we're sifting through information. And it seems like, you know, your prompting might be, it's not just knowledge aggregation, but knowledge orchestration in this kind of new area. But is there like an example of an existing app or, you know, experience or software you've consumed that, you know, you gave the travel example, that's like kind of agentic or forward thinking that you thought really incorporated some of this well? Like, I'm sure you have your source of inspiration or et cetera. Are there examples of thing that we kind of, you think are like, that's kind of, I think, the future? Like, I remember the first time I had a linked desktop and mobile experience, and it was like game changing. Like, oh my God, there's like, you know, persistence and it like remembers things, and there's, you know, part of that was like an identity thing, but it was so seamless. But is there anything you want to give a shout out to that kind of portends to the future that you've seen and are really thinking about?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I give an example. Let's go back to the travel example, the travel booking example. You know, if you're traveling to, you know, Las Vegas, for instance, you know, you punch in a couple of, you know, what's your dates, what, and then what my location, Las Vegas. And they do a pretty good job. And this is not AI. I'm just using it as an example. They do a pretty good job of ranking and ordering, you know, what most people, where the most people would want to stay. Right. And then from there you can, it's not prompting, but filtering is kind of like prompting. You say, actually sort by the most expensive, cause I'm going to go baller in Las Vegas, or the cheapest, cause I'm going to spend all my money on gambling. Right. So those are preferences, and it's somewhat of a prompt. And so you can kind of imagine, well, how does AI improve that filtering experience? And does it make it better? I don't have the answers. That's just kind of where my brain goes when I think about, you know, what is that niche usage of AI?
Well, whether it's niche or general, I think one of the kind of this core static concepts we have to continue to deal with is the fact that this is still going to be a multi-person operation, even with AI agents in the mix, right? We will, for the time being, we will still need our product managers, our engineers, our designers at all levels. They're working together today. They're going to keep working together in the future. I know your favorite thing to do is to make predictions about the future of AI, Mike. And I'm going to ask you to kind of do it again, because I think as you have seen the evolution of collaboration between, let's say, product engineering and design, we talk about Figma, we talk about AI agents in at work. Can you see tangible differences today on how these teams are working differently together? And does that portend something in the future? You know, if this trend continues, it might look like this. Is that noticeable to you in your day-to-day?
What's the biggest thing I notice in my day-to-day working with mostly colleagues is communication is a lot better. Let me rephrase that. Maybe not communication, but the way we articulate things is a lot better. So it's more like our Slack. I mean, this is kind of a cop-out excuse, but it's the way that we, you know, everything gets so well articulated now in Slack. But at the same time, it's extremely verbose. And so you can kind of tell when people are just like, hey, you just copy pasted like this ChatGPT vomit at me. And now I'm gonna have to go copy and paste it back and say,
please remove all instances of Delve and also make this shorter.
Yes. And so, that's kind of like the world that I've been living in, I feel like, in the past, like, say, you know, 3-4 months.
Well, let's take that to a logical conclusion, because I think all three of us and everyone listening has at least been at one point the victim of, you definitely just ChatGPT this and copied it to me, didn't you? Which sometimes is fine. It's like, look, I didn't know and you asked me, so this is what I got for you. But at the same time, I think a lot of that comes down to, well, what if that becomes, you know, not to be the teacher from the late 1990s here, but what if the calculator becomes everyone's crutch and no one really wants to think about arithmetic anymore? Mm-hmm. What if ChatGPT does become that communication facilitator that, sure, makes it easier on the person communicating, but to your point, yeah, there's a lot more information here. There's a lot more richness here, but it's maybe not the most efficient way to perform that communication. If that trend continues, if we start relying on AI more for, call it knowledge transfer, communication, Slack being kind of our knowledge base for things that are going on, is that, I can see a world where it is A, just more fodder for AIs of the future to read from and do rag and agents to look at and say, oh, the AI said a year ago this, so now I can use that as information. That's good. But on the other side, it just becomes, okay, well, if I'm just going to go to AI and copy and paste this and send it to another human, is this now a task that I should try to get away from the human so the human can go do something? Is that basically a signal from the human saying, I don't want to do this, so I'm making the AI do it for me. I would rather be working on something else. Both can be true. Neither could be true. Frankly, at the end of the day, it's just something to be aware of. The question is, for you, Is this, do you see a signal where people are using AI to automate something? And it's maybe almost a cry for help to say, I'd rather not be doing this. I'd rather be doing B over here. And that's why I've been giving the AI the task A to perform. From the design standpoint, I guess. Yeah.
Yes. I could totally see that. And I see, you know, the whole, like, you know, I just kind of copied and pasting this, you know, this ChatGPT vomit, I'm gonna call it vomit at you. There's this level, you know, that it's the human touch and the human to human communication or touch, whatever you want to call it, that will probably be one of the last things that we ever automate and hand over to AI. And that comes with, like, it's taste, you know, it's the taste, for instance, in this current world, you know, one of the biggest things that I notice, and I can tell when someone has copied pasted something to me, is one, it's the verbosity of it. Two, the bullet points that you copy and pasted, they're not the real bullet points, the rich bullet points, you know, they're the space, HTML disk.
You mean you don't talk normally in Markdown to your friends?
Yeah, exactly. And so, and it's just that level of kind of, like, taste and knowing, you know, what does the person that I'm communicating with, what do they need? What's their style? And that the being able to adapt from situation to situation, I don't think is something that AI is going to be able to do very, you know, in a short term. Let me give you an example. About 10, 15 years ago, I was working at a startup. And it had hired, you know, it liked to hire MBAs. Now, no, not throwing shade at MBAs, but he was a new grad, and he handed me, like, this 5-page paper on, like, something, and I was just like, I was really blunt. I'm like, I don't really want to read this 5-page paper. Can you just, like, summarize it in two, like, it just give me, like, two sentences. The thing, the topic we're talking about right now, and the question I asked you, can be answered in two sentences. And so that was kind of, like, my first, like, looking back at what I'm dealing with right now versus back then. That was a great example of what still kind of happened in whenever GPT wasn't around. It's just happening a lot more. But I think, to summarize it, what I'm trying to say is it goes back to the generalist aspect of generalists typically have more taste in some way than, say, a specialist. I don't, you know, that's me being very, you know, I'm stereotyping or whatever. But in my world, that's typically a safe thing to say. And when that comes, you know, taste is something that we will always need to have some level of layer. And that goes back to the North Star. It's the knowing that taste in terms of what I'm being given from AI, is this moving us closer to that North Star,
right,
or not? Is it what a human will want to digest and consume? Yes or no? So
maybe kind of on your point on communication, and kind of going back to your point on Figma, right? Kind of it changed. The words you used to describe Figma were collaboration, right? The words you used to describe Sketch were Photoshop, design, mm-hmm. and services. And so it's just interesting that trend of now you're using communication as that kind of thing. I'm sure the flavor of that is different though now, right? Because you have more people basically converging on generalists. So what are you kind of seeing? There's obviously, like Sinan mentioned, you know, everyone's just throwing prompts and et cetera back at each other, but we're able to create massively more kind of customized software much faster, right? With a design buddy, we're able to be a little bit more generalists. Have you noticed any changes in kind of ways you communicate, ways you document, or, you know, the types of the pace and texture of your development life cycle with your teammates as someone who's, you know, been a seasoned practitioner?
Yeah. My scope, like when what I enjoy the most right now is I can bullet point kind of a scope and like a PRD, kind of a product document, and then expand that out into a lot, like something that's a lot more articulate for my coworkers. And then at that same time, though, it's like, consider that a draft and then edit it after the fact. So you kind of apply that whole layer of taste. And also, did it actually expand on what I wanted it, needed it to expand on? Going back to like Figma, though, and the whole idea around collaboration, a world, you know, I think that prompting, for instance, you know, it's, you think of like, hey, you know, AI, you know, the first form factor that Figma launched with AI was a prompt. Hey, design this for me, right? But, you know, say give it 10 years from now, I don't know how long it's going to take, but I would love it for that little cursor that follows me when I'm pair designing with someone. So something I do right now, let me back up, is on my team, let's say I'm designing something, I will shoot a Slack to one of, you know, a team member that I know is like kind of specialized or has this like, you know, skill set in a certain type of problem I'm trying to solve. I Slack them and say, hey, here's this Figma link. Do you have 5 minutes to just like pair with me real quick? Just like shoot the shit, explore some, you know, some different avenues that I might not be thinking of. He or she comes into Figma. I see their cursor kind of fly around and we're talking. They see my cursor flying around. We're kind of communicating. I'm moving stuff around the screen. They're moving stuff around the screen. They're doing their own. They're, hey, what about this? Hey, what do you think about this direction? I go, oh, I love that. Then I go over to my little area and I'm like, hey, well, what about this direction? And we kind of meet in the middle. We're kind of bouncing ideas off each other, right? Now imagine if that cursor was AI. And not a human, you know, a human being, because what's the kind of difference, you know, in terms of like, you know, I think AI could eventually kind of take on that form factor in terms of when it comes to designing.
Yeah, I think it's super important. And outside of, you know, the Rick Rubin meme, everyone just gets known for taste, the intentionality, and I think communication is a good word. I think collaboration is kind of a great word for Figma, right? Because, you know, just the feel of European, you know, working with a designer, there's cycles and you're waiting on feedback and there's a whole life cycle. I think when you're inviting that buddy in, it is really live. Like iterating over a PRD is live. And it kind of relates to my next question is, if you were advising, you know, someone like you who is, you know, in their mid to late 20s, who had just got into the field with so much kind of technological disruption, what skills are most highly leveraged for the next decade in UX? And how would you approach learning your craft differently? I feel like in every field, no matter what, your curriculum of how I learned from you both even is completely different than what you would do now. So what skills are most leveraged and how do you approach, how would you approach your craft differently?
You know, the advice I would give is around, you know, really learn, I hate to keep going back to this, but it's, you know, learn your taste, learn really what, you know, the human, you know, what's pleasing to whatever human being that you are communicating with or delivering a tangible to, et cetera. Really learn that, you know, learn the human side of things. Because that's going to be the number one thing that does not change for the next, you know, throughout your career. And then you can apply that to whatever technology looks like in the future. Now though, I will say that the answer to this question is different than say 8 years ago. 8 years ago, I would have said, yeah. Oh, well, it's 2025 now, but 10 years ago, I would have said, hey, just get really good at just UX. Like you don't need to be good at UI design and visual design. We got design systems and there's, you know, to kind of help you do that. Just really get good at UX. But that's still kind of along the same lines as like, you're learning how people want to use interfaces. You know, what motivates people?
It's the North Star.
It's the North Star, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, but I'd say what impacts my answer the most is not really the current state of technology. It's kind of the current state of the industry and kind of what we've been through from a post-COVID, post, you know, where we're kind of like the trajectory of our industry right now, which is people are, we're starting to move more towards generalist type of, you know, hires where, you know, being just a UX designer now is not as, it's not good enough in a lot of, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, you really need to like to differentiate yourself from the other, the rest of the industry. You really need to step into being really good at UI design or kind of expand yourself outside of that simple circle of just a specialist. You need to have at least one or two more specialties that you can, you know, expand your circle or your skill set. But as technology does and AI does get more involved, you can lean on them for those other circles that you aren't quite yet began to like dip your toe in.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked about a lot today. It feels like the North Star of our conversation is exactly that, is part of what makes AI so usable and at the same time frustrating is that humans still have, you know, the concept of this is the goal. This is the North Star. This is the finish line. And with that information, with that context, an AI is going to be able to pick up slack here and there, whether it's acting more as a generalist, a specialist. In a lot of ways, who cares? Because if our job is to accomplish a task, meet that goal, cross that finish line, if the AI is moving the cursor versus a human is building me the Figma design, at the end of the day, quality is going to matter, but it's also going to come down to validation of, do people want this? Is this what I had in mind? Is it different than what I had in mind, but is it better in some way? That kind of iteration seems to still best be done by a human. Mike, thanks so much for being on the show. I am going to ask you one last question. And if you're watching the video, this is going to make more sense. If you're not watching the video, which you definitely should on YouTube and our shorts, is Back to the Future 1, 2, or 3. Which one are you watching on a rainy day as your comfort movie?
I'd say I'd start with 2. Oh. And then because I have to watch the whole trilogy, I'll go watch 1 because I'm like, well, I got to go back to the beginning. Then I end up watching 3 at, you know, because I need to finish the trilogy. And I realize, why didn't I start with 3? 3 is such a good movie.
3 is so underrated. Yes, I'm not going to lie to you. Yes. 1 is definitely my favorite, but 3 is so underrated. Mike, thanks so much for being on the show. You can come back anytime. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.